Yeah, there are many ways you can switch on and off genes. For example, through healthy lifestyle, that has a big impact on the epigenome. So if you exercise a lot, you change the epigenome. So you switch on genes that repair your cells, that protect your cells. With healthy food, so a lot of people say food is healthy because it contains antioxidants. That's a big, oversimplification. So food is healthy because of many other reasons than antioxidants. In fact, we see that many antioxidants can actually accelerate aging. So that's perhaps something else we can discuss later on. But foods are also healthy, for example, through their epigenetic effects. So healthy foods contain specific substances that can switch on or switch off specific genes.
Hi, my name is Pete McCall. And thank you for tuning in to this episode of the All About Fitness podcast. That voice you heard in the beginning is the guest for this episode, Dr. Chris Verberg. Now, Dr. Verberg, as you can tell, has a slightly different accent. He is from Belgium, so he has a kind of a Dutch, German, very, very interesting accent. And what he has to say is extremely important. Dr. Verberg is the author of The Longevity Code. For those of you that listen to All About Fitness regularly, you may remember a few months ago, I read a column from the Washington Post. I read an article from the Washington Post about aging and longevity. Well, Dr. Verberg was one of the experts interviewed for that article, and I had reached out to him, and, well, this is the interview. Dr. Verberg is an expert in something called nutrigerontology, which is how nutrition affects the aging process. He researches the science of longevity, and you're going to be amazed at what he has to say about what we can do to extend the lifespan and the potential that we may have for extending overall longevity. This is a fascinating conversation about an even more fascinating topic. As you know, my recent book, Ageless Intensity, High Intensity Workouts to Slow the Aging Process, came out. And I try to specialize in how exercise can slow the aging process. So to speak with an expert like Dr. Verberg and really understand at a much deeper level was extremely interesting. And I know you're gonna enjoy this interview. So let's get started with Dr. Chris Verberg, the author of The Longevity Code. Today on All About Fitness, we're speaking with Dr. Chris Verberg. I'm not going to get that pronunciation right, doctor. It's that hard Dutch accent. Who's the author of the Longevity Code? How are you doing today, doctor?
Doing great. Thank you.
And I'm going to jump right into it because I want to ask the question, why do we age? What is it that causes the process of aging in the human body?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. That's my passion. I've been studying aging since I was very, very young. So why do we age? Previously, it was thought that we mainly aged because of DNA damage, oxidative damage. Free radicals are these particles that damage your DNA through oxidation, or they damage your proteins or cells in general. But we see that now in the last 10 years, we learn more about aging than in the 1,000 years before. So we have seen a huge increase in our understanding of the aging process. There's still a lot we need to further solve and dive into, but we have learned a lot about aging in the last few years or 10 years. So why do we age? Well, it's not just DNA damage or oxidative damage. There are specific aging mechanisms. They are called the hallmarks of aging. A few years ago, there was a paper also about that called the hallmarks of aging, and it delineated or described 9 mechanisms of aging. So one important mechanism why we age is epigenetic dysregulation. So the epigenome is in fact the complicated molecular machinery that determines which genes are switched on or off. So, and this process, it goes awry when we get older and older. So as the decades pass, specific genes are switched off that should be switched on, like housekeeping genes and repair genes, and other genes that are not good, like oncogenes that increase your risk of cancer, they are switched on, for example. So this epigenetic dysregulation, so genes that are switched off that should be switched on and vice versa, is an important reason why we age. And in the last few years, we even have seen studies in which aging is reversed, so in which old animals are made young again through this epigenetic reprogramming. So you reset the epigenome a little bit, reprogram it, and these old organisms that have gray fur and bald spots like old mice, they have osteoporotic backs and they have muscle atrophy and so on. Through epigenetic reprogramming, these old mice look young again. So it's quite spectacular. And that's also a big paradigm shift, by the way, in the aging research, that it's not only about slowing down aging, but actually partially reversing the aging process. So making old organisms younger again. So epigenetic dysregulation is one important reason why we age. There are many other reasons, like accumulation of proteins. So inside and out our, outside our cells, you have proteins that accumulate and they suffocate the cells or hinder their proper functioning. And there are many aging-related diseases in which protein accumulation plays a role, by the way. Case in point is Alzheimer's disease, where we have this accumulation of proteins inside the brain cells, outside the brain cells, and these brain cells, they get suffocated by the protein junk that accumulates. So that's a second reason why we age. Of course, you have mitochondrial dysfunction. So these are the mitochondria are the energy plants, the power plants of our cells. And when we get older, these mitochondria, these power plants, they wear down. And that also plays a role in aging. You have also DNA damage, telomere shortening, which is mainly important in false dividing tissues. And so these are a few important reasons why we age. And the Hallmarks of Aging paper spoke about or mentioned 9 reasons why we age. I mentioned a few of them, but they left out some other reasons why we age, like cross-linking. So these are connections between proteins that make up our tissues. So, for example, in the skin, the collagen proteins, they get cross-linked. So there are cross-links created between different collagen proteins, and that makes this the tissue more stiff because everything is glued together. For example, by sugar. Sugar forms sugar crosslinks between these proteins. And that's also a reason why our tissues become more stiff, less flexible, more wrinkly. If you have a lot of cross-linking in the blood vessel walls, that also contributes to stiffer blood vessels and so on. Also, transcriptomic changes and so on, changes in splicing, etc. So there are many reasons why we age. But very interestingly, and I already alluded before to that, it's possible to target a lot of these aging mechanisms simultaneously, for example, through epigenetic reprogramming. So if you upregulate specific proteins in the cells that reprogram the epigenome, you undo a lot of other aging damage. You improve mitochondrial dysfunction, you rewind the protein accumulation, you also repair the DNA. All these things happen simultaneously, for example, through epigenetic reprogramming. So this is perhaps one reason why some scientists believe that epigenetic dysregulation is the most important reason why we age. But the jury is still out there. So we are unraveling more and more aging processes and learning more about the ones we discovered.
Yeah, it's amazing how it's not just one process about how it's accumulation of a number of things. And I think that's why it's so important to pay attention to all kinds of lifestyle factors. Now, the one thing that pops up, Doctor, how easy is it to switch a gene on and off? I mean, it's not like just switching a light switch when you walk into the room and you flip it from the off to the on. What's involved? Because that sounds fascinating to think that we could go in and manipulate our genes right now to reverse the aging process. So what exactly is involved with that switching a gene on or changing the activation of genes?
Yeah, there are many ways you can switch on and off genes. For example, through healthy lifestyle, that has a big impact on the epigenome. So if you exercise a lot, you change the epigenome. So you switch on genes that repair your cells, that protect your cells. With healthy food, so a lot of people say food is healthy because it contains antioxidants. That's a big, oversimplification. So food is healthy because of many other reasons than antioxidants. In fact, we see that many antioxidants can actually accelerate aging. So that's perhaps something else we can discuss later on. But foods are also healthy, for example, through their epigenetic effects. So healthy foods foods contain specific substances that can switch on or switch off specific genes. Classic case in point are, for example, zinc. Healthy food contains zinc, which impacts the epigenome. It contains B vitamins. These are very important for methylation of the epigenome. So methylation means putting small molecules called methyl groups on the DNA. And if you cover large stretches of DNA with methyl groups, we call this methylation, then you switch off the gene because the DNA is covered with methyl groups and the gene cannot be transcribed into RNA and translated into protein. So in that regard, specific a lot of substances in healthy food like alpha ketoglutarate, malate, low dose lithium. That's more found in specific drinking water sometimes. All these substances in foods can impact the epigenome and the activity of genes, and vice versa. If you eat a lot of unhealthy food, you eat a lot of fast food or unhealthy fats or large amounts of unhealthy animal protein that's overcooked and so on. So anyway, that way you can impact the epigenome and you switch off cell protective genes, for example. So there are many ways to do that. You can also impact the epigenome through biotechnology. So you have food that impacts the epigenome, supplements that can impact the epigenome, like B vitamins, alpha ketoglutarate, lithium, and like I mentioned, substances you also often find in food, but you can also take supplements for that. And thirdly, of biotech, there are all kinds of novel biotechnology companies looking into these epigenetic switches to reverse aging. And we have seen great studies in the last few years. One way to do this is through Yamanaka factors. So Yamanaka factors are specific proteins that if you upregulate them or increase their amount in cells of these Yamanaka factors in a cyclical way. So for a few days, there are a lot of Yamanaka factors in the cell, and for 5 days, there are Yamanaka factors. So you do it in a cyclical way. You can rejuvenate organisms. So they have done this, for example, in mice. These were old mice. You cyclically upregulate or activate these Yamanaka factors in these cells. These Yamanaka factors will epigenetically reprogram cells, and these mice become younger again. And you slow down all kinds of aging processes. And if you take muscle biopsies of these mice, I show it a lot in my presentations when I give a lecture, you see that these muscles are rejuvenated. You can see it with your own eye. You don't have to be a pathobiologist to see the difference that these mice, their muscle cells look younger. They are bigger, more plumpy. And that's through epigenetic reprogramming. So there are now companies working on these technologies to introduce these Yamanaka factors in our cells to rejuvenate cells. So one company is a Harvard spin-off that's looking into this. Is through David Sinclair, who's doing a lot of research there using a few Yamanaka factors for rejuvenation of the eye. And there are other companies looking for Yamanaka factors to introduce them in the knee, for example, to rejuvenate the knee cartilage. So these are a few examples like Term Bio or other companies that are looking into these aspects.
That's fascinating that we can really manipulate like that. I mean, I've not always, but for a few years, I've considered strength training doctor to be the ultimate kind of recycling process in the body because of the benefits of mechanotransduction to constantly, when you strength train, you're constantly producing new cells, you're sending the signals to the new cells. Is that why exercise is so important in the aging process? Is that it's signaling this kind of the cell production, the cell regeneration? I mean, I would imagine that kind of goes along with manipulating the epigenome, is that the body is always constantly looking to repair itself and looking to rebuild itself.
Yeah, that's definitely right. So exercise has huge benefits on the aging process. It's a powerful way, of course, to slow down aging. If you exercise, a lot of good things happen in the body and also bad things, but they are good things. It's called hormesis. So with exercise, you improve stem cell health, for example. You increase blood flow to the tissues, which is very important to deliver proper nutrients and other substances that can rejuvenate the stem cell milieu. You damage sometimes or quite often, if you exercise properly, you damage your muscle cells, but this damage will induce the cells to repair themselves better and to prepare them for the next bout of exercise that could damage them. So it's called hormesis. A little bit of damage can be healthy because this stress that you put on the cells through exercise, in fact, will activate all kinds of repair and protective mechanisms inside cells, muscle cells, but also stem cells that help the cells to protect themselves better against the next time you exercise, but also against aging. So exercise has multiple benefits. Of course, that being said, I'm a big proponent of exercise and nutrition and supplements to slow down aging as much as possible. But even if you do all this perfectly, you have like a super healthy lifestyle, you won't live 250 or 200 years. For that, you need biotechnology like these Yamanaka factors to reverse the process. And I think it's likely we will go to a future where people will every 5 or 10 years get a treatment that rewinds the aging process through Yamanaka factors or through crosslink breakers that break these age-related crosslinks, through substances that improve mitochondrial health, like even by infusing mitochondria into the body or infusing mitochondrial DNA that repairs the mitochondria, through gene editing that give you genes that help your cells to protect themselves better. That's a future we're very likely going to. And I'm also a partner of an investment fund, and we speak regularly to professors in that regard. And we will go to a future very likely where people will become much, much older, like 150, 200 years, but still look young. So it's not just about slowing down aging and becoming 150 years and sitting in a wheelchair for 50, 60 years. No, the idea is to become young, rewind aging. And it's not that difficult, in fact, because nature is doing it the whole time. It's rewinding aging in reproductive cells, because that's the reason why babies are born young every time. We see a lot of animals that become 200 or 400 years old. And you have bowhead whales that become 200 years old, or specific sharks that can grow 400 or 500 years old. And they look young still. And most importantly, I'm most interested in this approach as a medical doctor into addressing aging, because if you slow down and reverse aging, that's the best way to keep people healthy for the longest time, because not only you would live much longer, you will stay healthier for much longer. If you slow down aging or partially reverse it, you substantially reduce your risk of heart disease, cancer, Alzheimer's disease, osteoporosis, macular degeneration. So all these aging-related diseases are addressed at the same time, because you address the root cause of all these diseases, which is aging. And that's an interesting future we're heading towards.
Well, thank you. Because I was just going to ask you, how did you get started? How did you get started down the path of studying longevity? I mean, I think it's fascinating. And you referenced Dr. Sinclair. I think in his book, he refers to aging as a disease. Is that the way that the medical community is approaching aging? Is they're looking at it as a disease they're trying to treat and they're trying to solve?
Well, not enough yet. Okay. So it's a paradigm shift that's happening, but it's happening too slow, in my opinion. So most medical doctors are not trained in aging. Not trained properly. Also not in nutrition, by the way. I took my education to become a medical doctor in my country was 7 years. And we had half an hour of those 7 years was spent on nutrition, which is absolutely insane. I mean, nutrition is so important to stay healthy. Every doctor should be a specialist in nutrition. In fact, the best doctors in the US, in Europe, they are all specialized in nutrition. And as a first patients and exercise and sleep optimization, stress reduction, we are not taught about that. But also equally worse or bad is, as medical doctors, we are not taught about aging. We have geriatrics, okay, but that's more learning how to treat the symptoms of aging, but not doing anything about the root cause of aging. And we are not properly trained in what causes aging as a medical doctor. So that's a very sad and unfortunate, because most diseases we treat as a medical doctor are the result of aging. So heart disease, Alzheimer's disease, cancer, it's mainly aging that causes these diseases. If you eat unhealthy, if you don't sleep enough, if you don't exercise enough, you accelerate the risk of these diseases. But in the end, everyone will sooner or later die of Alzheimer's disease, heart disease, cancer, or other aging-related diseases, because it's like a fundamental reason why we age and die. We are not trained about it. So that's very unfortunate. So I think most doctors also consider aging and as an actual process. So they think that aging is something different than heart disease or Alzheimer's disease. But they call aging of the heart, they call it heart disease. Aging of the brain, they call it Alzheimer's disease. Aging of the blood vessels, they call it, for example, hypertension or atherosclerosis. But aging of the whole body is certainly not a disease, which is a bit weird, if you ask me. So I think slowly but steadily, more and more doctors are realizing that the same processes that cause aging, like mitochondrial dysfunction, epigenetic dysregulation, protein accumulation, the processes I mentioned. So they are really realizing more and more that the same processes that cause aging also cause Alzheimer's disease, cause heart disease, cause osteoarthritis and osteoporosis. It's still, we have a lot of work to do there to educate the medical community about, the importance of targeting aging as the best way to keep people healthy for as long as possible, and by that simultaneously addressing multiple aging-related diseases in one fell swoop. And also the same for governments. Governments consider aging as not a disease, as a normal process. So that's very unfortunate. They are underfunding aging. They are spending billions of dollars trying to find a cure for heart disease or Alzheimer's disease, and they hardly spend any money on aging. And that's a bit not a good way to go about it, because even if you could cure all heart disease, right? It's a little thought experiment, but just imagine I have a magic wand and I can conjure up a treatment that cures all heart disease. So nobody would have a heart attack anymore or a stroke. How much longer do you think that people would live on average if you could get rid of the most important cause of death, which is heart disease? Well, the answer is, they calculated that it's not a lot. So if we could cure all heart disease, people would live only about 2.8 years longer. And that's not a lot if you get rid of the most important cause of death in most developed countries. So why is that number so low? Well, if people wouldn't die anymore of heart disease, they will die a few years later of another aging-related disease. They will die of Alzheimer's disease or aging-related kidney dysfunction or cancer and so on. So therefore, instead of spending billions of dollars trying to find a cure or some medication for heart disease or Alzheimer's disease, we should better spend much more money on trying to slow down aging, because that's the best way to substantially reduce your risk of heart disease and many other diseases at the same time.
Yeah, I had never thought about that before, Doctor, of where we study heart disease as a symptom of aging, but we don't put it all together in the process. I'll be thinking about that, because I think that's a great point. Now, when you wrote the longevity code, what will readers get out of the longevity code? Meaning, in the longevity code, what recommendations do you have for how people can extend their lifespan?
Yeah, so the longevity code, it's a bit original book in the sense it's one of the very little or few books that talk both about lifestyle, especially nutrition, to slow down aging, but also about biotechnology to slow down aging, because I think all of them are important. So often you have books about nutrition to stay healthy, but they don't really mention biotech and vice versa. The main content of the longevity code revolves about nutrition, because I'm very interested in nutrition to slow down aging. I also created a new scientific field around that. It's called nutrigerontology, and it studies the aging process to be able to give much better nutrition advice, because there is a lot of nutrition advice out there, and a lot of this advice is like not that good. It's very contradictory. For example, there are hundreds of different diets you can follow: high protein diets, keto diets, calorie restriction diets, etc., etc. So Dukan diets, Atkins diets, Paleo diets, and so on. So it's very confusing to know what's the best diet on the long term, because most diets, they look at short-term effects. They look at weight loss and improving insulin sensitivity or lowering your cholesterol. And that's all good and well on the short term, but what on the long term? And then we see that most diets' effect on the long term could actually accelerate aging. So I approach diets and nutrition from a whole new angle, at least I did many years ago. To decide or to better discern or assess what's the best food pattern or diet and the best supplements to live longer. To give an example how insights into aging can much better help us to provide better long-term diet advice. Take, for example, milk. There is a lot of misconceptions and confusion about milk. So you have people saying milk is healthy because it contains calcium and so on. And then you have people saying milk is not healthy and so on. But if you approach milk, for example, from the aging perspective, from biogerontological insights, we see that milk contains all kinds of growth factors and other substances that activate all kinds of aging pathways, like mTOR, IGF, insulin-like growth factor, insulin receptors. And milk strongly activates these receptors, and these receptors are strong aging pathways or inducers of aging. So also it makes sense because milk is made by nature to make calves grow very fast. So it activates all kinds of growth pathways, but a lot of these growth pathways are also aging pathways. In the sense, if you activate those growth pathways, you also accelerate aging. So this is one example how insights into aging can better assess the long-term risks or benefits of specific foods and end these eternal discussions often that you see about proponents and detractors of specific foods or diets. And that's what longevity code is about what's the best food to live longer, the best supplements to live longer, and also speak a bit about the biotechnology to live longer, like epigenetic reprogramming or mitochondrial reprogramming and other interesting ways to help our species to break through our biological ceiling of 120 years of maximum lifespan we can achieve as a species. So very likely in the future, as I mentioned before, we will break through that ceiling and we'll be able to attain much longer healthy lifespans.
Well, if we can live up to 150 years, I think a lot of us are going to be calling our retirement planners here in the next few minutes because it'd be nice to live to 150, but you need to be able to afford it. Now, getting ready to wind down the conversation, Doctor, in the work that you've done, what's been the biggest surprise? Like, what's been the one finding in the field of longevity that's caused you to really scratch your head, that just kind of that caught you by surprise, but if you have like one finding that really was that we should learn about that we might be able to apply in our lives, what would that be?
I have a lot of them, but I think the one big one is the notion I alluded to before, is that aging is a bit of a plastic process. So you can reverse it partially. So previously it was only about slowing down aging, but we have seen in recent studies that it's possible to reverse aging. And in fact, the information to stay young, it's still encoded in our body. It's just not read properly. And we have seen in all kinds of studies that it's possible to let's say reprogram the body, to remember the body, help the body remember again about its younger situation and reprogramming the body to a younger state. One way is to epigenetic reprogramming, where if you change the epigenetic patterns in the cells, you can rejuvenate these cells. Another way is through young blood, for example. It's called heterochronic parabiosis. It's a mouthful, but it means these are studies that showed that if you expose, for example, old mice to young blood, they also rejuvenate again. And that's interesting because in young blood, there are specific substances that tell the old cells, like, okay, that can reprogram these old cells in a younger state. So it's a dynamic equilibrium or aging. So it's not a one-way street. It's possible for ourselves to remember again what it was to be younger, to reprogram them again into a younger state. You only need to give these cells a nudge through epigenetic reprogramming or through exposing these cells to a healthy younger environment, like through young blood or substances in young blood. Scientists are working on that. We have seen in recent trials, by the way, that showing that if you expose, if you change the blood in old people with Alzheimer's disease, you can slow down Alzheimer's disease. So that's very interesting. That's an interesting insight that you can reprogram cells again into a younger state. I think a second insight would be, for example, that antioxidants don't slow down aging. I think that's a big misconception, and that, in fact, most supplements don't really slow down aging. And there are only a few that have a lot of science behind them that can really slow down aging, like alpha-ketoglutarate, substances like quercetin, pterostilbene, microdosed lithium, glucosamine, which is used for joints but has also shown to extend lifespan in different species and was associated with reduced mortality in humans. So, but these are often supplements most people don't associate with anti-aging. I think most anti-aging supplements contain antioxidants or specific vitamins and minerals or herbs that unfortunately don't slow down aging. So that's another insight, and that antioxidants can sometimes even accelerate aging, because if you expose cells to a lot of antioxidants that you take through a pill, for example, exogenous antioxidants, the cells will say, there are enough antioxidants, so I don't have to upregulate or produce my own antioxidant enzymes. So the cells downregulate their own antioxidant enzymes, which is not a good thing, because these antioxidant enzymes are much, much more powerful than any antioxidants you would take by mouth. So that could explain why a lot of studies show that some antioxidants actually could accelerate aging, as I also explained in my book, for example.
That's fascinating. And now you say that, and the question that comes to mind is, I see reactive oxygen species, ROS. I see that kind of pop up quite a bit in terms of like high volume endurance athletes, because I know there's been some research, doctor, and I'll make the acknowledgement that you're not an exercise scientist. You're more of a nutritionist and medical doctor. But I know there's been some look at ultra distance runners and the fact that they age quicker. Could that be due to reactive oxygen species and the amount they produce from high volume endurance training?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, in fact, often people look at ROS, these reactive oxygen species, that these are free radicals. You look at free radicals as a bad thing, but actually it's not that simple. So the classic idea was that free radicals are bad and antioxidants are good, because the antioxidants neutralize the free radicals, like the reactive oxygen species. So it was a classic idea. And we age because of these free radicals damaging the cells, and antioxidants, they mop up these free radicals, and that's that. Unfortunately, we have seen in studies that if you give a lot of antioxidants to animals or humans, they don't live longer. Sometimes you even accelerate aging through the mechanisms I just explained. And we also see sometimes if you upregulate the production of free radicals in animals, they live longer, actually. Or if you give like C. elegans, which is a widely used model organism in aging research, if you give them substances that induce free radicals, like specific weed killers, which are toxic, but if you give them a little bit of weed killer, like substances that upregulate the production or create a lot of free radicals in these animals or these organisms, they actually live longer. So it's a bit contrary to what you would think. Yeah? You would think free radicals are bad, but if you induce free radical production in some animals or organisms, they actually live longer. And if you give antioxidants, they sometimes live shorter. So this is all very contradictory to this classic outdated idea about antioxidants and free radicals. So exercise, in fact, creates a lot of free radicals in our cells because our cells have to work harder, like our muscle cells and so on. And through that process, they create more free radicals. And that's actually a good thing because these free radicals damage the cells a little bit. And the cells will say, oh, there are a lot of free radicals here. I will upregulate my own antioxidant enzymes to neutralize these free radicals. And that way, you through that little bit of damage and free radical induction, you induce the cells to better repair and protect themselves, which is the reason, it's one of the reasons why exercise is healthy. Now, you can also overdo that. And if you like these long endurance runners or these people that do like way too much, very hard exercise, they create too much free radical damage and other damage. And that's perhaps not a good thing. But it's difficult to really overdo it in the sense that if you exercise regularly, even daily, and you do it for 1 hour, a few hours, and you build it up gradually, if you first start to do this, there is no problem. But it's only like for these top athletes or people who do these marathons and so on, they perhaps damage their body too much. But most people don't have to worry about that.
Well, doctor, I appreciate those insights. And Dr. Verberg is the author of the Longevity Code. How can people get more information about the work you're doing and stay up to date on any new publications you might have coming out?
Yeah, well, they can read my book, The Longevity Code. I have a website. It's called chrisverberg.com. There I have some information too. And in general, I think I would encourage everyone to learn more about aging and how to slow down aging. So in that regard, there is also a website. In fact, I'm also a co-founder of a specific company. It's called novelslabs.com. And it provides all kinds of specific substances to impact aging. We believe these substances are the best science-based substances to slow down aging. But the website is also a content platform. So I put there a lot of content on how to slow down aging. So what's the best diet for longevity? What are the best supplements for longevity? What are the best treatments for your skin to slow down skin aging and so on? So the idea of that website is to be a platform for people to learn more about aging and to see how they can slow down the aging process, because that's in the end the root cause of why we die aging and why we get all these diseases. And lifestyle is a great way to slow it down, and we will go to a future where biotechnology will even further enable us to attain healthy, long lives.
All right, well, doctor, I really appreciate the work you're doing. I greatly appreciate your time. It was a pleasure to have this conversation with you.
My pleasure. Thank you for the great questions.
Now, admittedly, that may have been a little tough to understand in some parts because of his accent. I mean, in having the conversation, it was a little bit tough for me to really hear him and really understand what he was saying. I don't have the best hearing in the world and with that accent. But this is such a fascinating topic. And Dr. Verberg is in line with Dr. David Sinclair. You heard us talk about that. And with the thought that we could live somewhere to be 125 to 150 years old. Is that something we'd want? Because think about that. I mean, we have to rethink about how we work, how we live, how we save for retirement, what retirement means. I mean, right now, the average lifespan in the United States is right about 77, 78 years old, give or take. So 150 years is double that. And what type of life is that in our later years? Anyway, this is fascinating. And I want to try to bring more of this to you about longevity and everything else, because this is just such an important topic. Because we really are. I mean, the fascinating thing is we are in a new age. Because as you've heard me talk about in previous episodes, this is absolutely the first time we've ever had an aging population of people who've exercised their entire lifespan. People in their 60s and 70s who started exercising back in the 1970s when it first became popular, when fitness first became popular, this is the first time that we've had people this fit this late in life. And we can already see the changes it's having. I mean, I live in Southern California, as you know, and there are so many older adults who are active surfing, mountain biking, road cycling, triathlon, running, that it really, it's redefining what we're doing and what it means to be quote unquote old. And that's fascinating. And that's frankly the goal of this podcast, is to help us all learn how to manage that process so that you understand, that you get a better idea of how you can use exercise to manage aging, because this is, as you heard, I mean, we are on the precipice of really some life-changing discovery. So, hey, with that, I've been going through some life changes myself. I shared recently that I've started a new job. As of December 2021, I am the new National Director of Fitness Education for EOS. EOS is a growing health club company with locations in Florida, Nevada, Utah, Southern California, where I am, and Arizona. It's a really interesting opportunity. EOS is not a commercial for EOS, but EOS is what they call a high-value, low-price club where you pay for the amenities that you're going to use. It's a very interesting model, and I like it because it's a relatively new company. They started up about 5 years ago, and it really is an opportunity to create a program almost from scratch. They have some stuff in place now. They have about 60 clubs in those markets I mentioned earlier. There are 60 clubs, and they have some very aggressive growth plans. And I'm reunited with some of the executive leadership team from previous places I've worked, so that's exciting. But all that to say that I am going to be focused on that for the very near – well, it's going to be my job, ideally. So for the next few months, I'm going to be learning that, and I'm going to be trying to get these podcasts out as regular as I can. I have some great interviews coming up, some stuff, some folks I know you're going to love, but just want to kind of give you a heads up that if you don't see these drop every week, that I'm trying to put them out as frequently as I can getting into a new job and a new role. And it's going to be really cool. If you live in one of the markets where EOS is, they have really good options for fitness, and it's a company I'm really excited. I wouldn't be working there if I truly didn't believe in what they're doing and the product they're putting together. So just so you know, that's kind of my focus for a little bit, and I am not a spokesperson for the company. I'm just kind of let you, since you are my listener, I want to let you in on what's going on. So if you see the schedule kind of get a little erratic, I drop a podcast 1 week and go about maybe 10 days before I drop another one. That's why, just trying to balance a lot of things and learning a whole new opportunity. But it's going to be a fascinating one. So, hey, if you're still there, thank you so much for listening. You can reach out to me, Pete@PeteMcCallFitness.com. That's Pete@PeteMcCallFitness.com. You can follow me, see videos I put up on All About Fitness Podcast on both YouTube and Instagram. That's All About Fitness Podcast on both YouTube and Instagram. And, hey, you can connect with me there. And as always, thanks for stopping by. And I do look forward to having you join me for future episodes of All About Fitness.